Representative Burkhart. Representative Larson.
Here.
Representative Schwartz.
Here.
Representative Summers.
Here.
Representative Walters.
Here.
Representative Wilson.
Here.
Senator Dockstetter.
Here.
Senator Driscoll.
Here.
Senator Hastert.
Here.
Senator Landon.
Here.
Co-Chairman Nicholas.
Here.
Chairman Burns.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, a couple of quick notes. We are being streamed over the internet, so turn on your mics. If you're going to speak, everybody and anybody in the audience, if you have a cell phone, please either turn it off or put it on vibrate so it doesn't disturb us. We, as I said, we have been going through an explanatory as of yesterday and this morning and this afternoon. So they're not really official committee meeting in the fact that we're going to take any action. So we'll be hearing the rest of the budget bill. Right now we're into the 300, so that won't take long. And then we'll get an explanation of the Capcom bill. And that should carry us till pretty close to 2 o'clock when the House and the Senate reconvene. So with that, Don, take it away.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the next item, unless there were any questions on the Section 300 transfers, happy to revisit any of those items. The next section is Section 301.
I have a question. On the page 79, line 14M, the $27.5 million, there you said there has been no action taken. Is there a note to have a footnote put in?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. So throughout this bill, any highlighted language, which this is highlighted, will require a vote when we proceed to the round.
But you have a note. Okay.
Yes.
You have a note to remind us of.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Don.
Section 301 provides two subsections of borrowing authority for cash flow purposes. You made two modest adjustments to this provision from prior years. First and foremost, the general fund borrowing will come out of the LSRA as opposed to the pooled income. This comes primarily at a recommendation of a management audit bill, and I suspect you will be seeing that in the coming days for potential consideration. And the second item is pursuant to some of the borrowings, you have provided a interest rate equal to the interest received on the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account for the prior year. These first two provisions do not have an interest rate associated with them, as they are cash flow to the general fund. And the second one is cash flow for the school foundation program. In the case of the general fund, you would literally be paying yourself interest to the same account. Section 302 is a carryover from the last decade or so.
So, Don, let's just go back and discuss that a little bit. Why would we have any interest rate? It turns to me probably kind of into a bookkeeping nightmare. And so I'm just trying to – can you just re-explain why we did it and what the pros and cons are?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. And it depends on the account, for example. So in the event, for example, that later on there is borrowing authority for the employee group health insurance, that is a enterprise type of an account that includes a lot of political subdivisions, Natrona County School District, other entities. And if that fund requires a loan for borrowing purposes, it never has exercised that loan. But if it does, there's some argument that that fund – and the beneficiaries in that fund ought to pay the costs of that time value of money. In this case, subsection A, it's literally interfund between the general fund and the LSRA. Even if the general fund were to pay interest, the LSRA interest is deposited into the general fund. So not only is it left pocket to the right pocket, it's literally left pocket to the right pocket and back to the initial pocket. So there's really little... Now, there is one other issue, and you will see this as a bill coming forward by the Management Audit Committee. For years, the school foundation program took out a loan from the permanent school fund, the common school account, and it would be charged a rate of 6% interest. That has impacts on the spending policy, and to the extent that for example, $500 million are loaned, that benefits the performance of the $3 billion fund, so it tends to look better. Last year, I believe the bill was sponsored by Senator Coe, possibly Representative Northrup, eliminated that provision and took the 6% down to 0%. There is a bill that will be up for introduction from the Management Audit Committee that raises that interest rate to the equivalent of the Consumer Price Index for the prior calendar year. The argument there is, yes, it's an accounting issue, but there is some question as to whether or not a interest-free loan should be provided by a permanent fund. And that's a policy decision for you to determine. The second provision, Section 303, appears on the bottom of page 80, top of page 81, similar borrowing authority for the Hathaway Scholarship Program. The Hathaway Scholarship Program often needs funds for cash flow purposes because those scholarships are often provided to students and the educational institutions providing services to those students in as early as August when the fall semester commences. Well, in that scenario, you have a only one, maybe 1.5 months of investment income has been earned, and half of the outflows occur to pay for those scholarships in that first 60 days or so. So that's why the Hathaway Scholarship has some ability to provide cash flow purposes. In this case, it is from the LSRA, and the Hathaway program is charged an interest rate equal to the prior investment earnings on the LSRA. Probably the policy argument is these are two different funds, and so one fund should pay the other interest rates, unlike the general fund and the LSRA, which are essentially commingled.
Were you still answering the co-chair's question, or were you on 303?
Mr. Chairman, I was on 302.
Oh, 302.
302,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So my one question is, why not use the interest rate that it is occurring or accruing at the time? Why go back a year? Because you could have, theoretically, you could have a substantial difference. I mean, not likely, but.
Mr. Chairman, you could. They don't know. It's much easier for bookkeeping that they can say, well, we earned 2% last year. They don't know what they will earn, and the amounts may vary literally by day, where the loan balance is $2 million on day one, $2.5 million on day two. Section 303 provides for a number of carryovers. I will address these. Almost all were at the request of the executive branch. The first two are in the public defender's office, capital case funding, $1 million in general funds, and $187,000 in special revenue. This is subsection A and B on pages 81 and 82. Subsection C provides for the Attorney General Office to carry over $342,000. This was the appropriation you provided last biennium in the case and can only be spent in the case that you have a switch failure. That was discussed at length at the agency hearing.
Mr. Co-Chair, Don, how much is being carried over on the capital?
A total of about $1.2 million. That's 85% general funds, 15% special revenue. That special revenue is generated from county payments.
From where?
The counties each have to contribute a payment, I believe.
Toward the capital?
Toward the public defender program.
Oh, okay.
Subsection D appears on the bottom of page 82. This is a request by DEQ to carry over funds for data migration and storage in the amount of $108,000. Page 83, subsection E, this is the $16,000 carryover for the FIFI program, or Film Industry Financial Incentive. Again, none of these are new funds. These are all previously appropriated. Subsection F at the bottom of page 83 is a carryover since the 2014 budget of up to $17.275 million for energy value added and industrial plan. The primary expenditure out of this is the a technology a facility in Gillette.
At Gillette College?
No, at the I believe it's the Dry Fork coal-fired power plant.
Oh, the yeah, the
integrated testing.
Integrated testing, yeah, okay.
And Mr. Kocher, how much of the what's the balance on this fund? Do we know?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. The last time we checked, it was several million.
Kevin, do you have the balance on that?
I don't have it handy, but I can get it for you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, subsection G on the top of page 84 was at the request of a governor's letter that any leftover funds related to employer-paid health, dental, or life insurance be allowed to be carried over. At this point, the estimate is roughly $15 million would be available for carryover. We did not specify the amount. We just said any amounts available. The issue here is that in the event health insurance rates rise beyond those currently estimated in the budget request, there would be an immediate source of funds that could be used to address those increases prior to a request for a supplemental budget.
And Mr. Kocher, so Don, first of all, what's the balance of that fund now? And so then we'll be adding back $15 million to that balance. Is that right?
No, Mr. Chairman. I believe the balance, and Kevin can correct me, is about $20, $25 million. And, again, it changes daily.
Right.
This $15 million would be set aside in the state auditor's office and be used for employer-paid health insurance benefits across all state agencies to the extent that next year there is an inflationary increase beyond what is contemplated in the budget. The legislature has done something like this in a few times over the past two decades. They set aside those funds and make them available. Otherwise, these funds would revert if you don't have this section, and they would be deposited in the general fund.
What does $15 million equate to in terms of the percentage of increase on premiums? Do we know?
Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the budget office.
Mr. Chairman, the action that would be taken upon this would sweep the general fund portion, but if there was a rate increase necessary, then we would be capturing all the other special revenue sources along with that. So the estimate then would increase dramatically because you're getting get it from transportation funds, commission funds, Natrona County, et cetera. So that'd be like a 1 month's value. And just off the top of my head, you'd be thinking maybe 10% for that total.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next and last section of the carryovers is the emergency reserve for Title 25. We spoke about this when discussing the Department of Health. We will also flag this because, at least at this point, this is an error, only error that we have identified in terms of drafting. On page 85, line 11, that $10,329,887 should actually be $7,329,887. So we will request a technical correction there.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, Don, would you just walk us through then what the full appropriation is currently in the bill and what's available through this footnote?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So the standard budget appropriation for Title 25 is approximately $4.5 million. The agency requested that be increased by $6 million. The Joint Appropriations Committee cut that request in half and authorized $3 million.
Is so that part of the one-year funding, though?
That's the one-year funding motion, correct.
So it would be six.
So it would be the 7.329. They have to spend that first. Then this provides a carryover of up to $6.5 million. I believe the current anticipated ending balance is going to be $5 million, but, of course, these change on a monthly basis. So you would have $5 million, maybe $6.5 million, plus the 7.3 for a total of about $13 million of appropriated funds for Title 25. In addition, There is a later provision which offers the Department of Health full flexibility with their 100 series to identify vacancy savings and generate additional funds for this purpose.
And then if you add the 1 year back in for 2020, that would be $16 million?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Do we know what the total expenditures are to date for Title 25?
For this biennium.
For this biennium.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's in a report that you've received in SharePoint. I don't have that handy with me now. Mr. Chairman, responding to an earlier question on the ITC funding and value-added energy, the original appropriation was $17.25 million. As of the end of the year, thanks to the Budget Office for providing the information, $9.4 million balance. $9.4 million balance.
So that's referring to the number on page 83, line 25,
right? Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Finally, before we leave this section, all of these need to be effective immediately because they, if they're effective July 1, they would revert on June 30th, so they need to be made effective today or upon completion of the act.
When you say all of these, you're referring to?
The entire section 303.
And you've got that footnote in the first.
Mr. Chairman, moving to the next section, begins on page 86. This is for employee benefits. Subsection A provides for the annual maximum premium amount for five different types of family plans, single, family, married with children, both spouses work for the state, all permutations of that. And this provides a limit on the Department of Administration and Information, Division of Human Resources, Unit of Employee Group Health Insurance, as to how high they can raise their rates for each of the two calendar years, which commence during the next biennium. That's subsection A. Subsection B, C, D, E, F, and G all relate to retiree health insurance payments. So subsection B on the top of page 88 is the pre-2008 retirees. So those are individuals who retired before 2008, before this was ever a program. For the committee's recollection, this program has never been codified in statute. This is the only authorization for the program. And the benefits provided are based upon years of service and the monthly amounts specified in these subsections, $11 in one instance and $5.75 in the other instance.
And where does it start? Where do the retirees start? What section?
Retirees start on page 88, subsection B.
Okay, thanks.
So first subsection is for the pre-2008 retirees. Subsection C is the post-2008 retirees. Subsection D is the other funded employees, meaning not generally funded employees. For example, Department of Environmental Quality, federally funded employees, Department of Insurance, special revenue funded employees. Subsection E is highly unlikely, but we always try to prepare for any possible eventuality, and that is if the $26 million balance is insufficient to cover benefits to all individuals in subsection B and C, then the payments shall be reduced to retirees on a proportional basis. That is highly unlikely to occur, but we put that in there as a safeguard. So the department knows what to do to the extent funds are insufficient.
Don, help me out again. We're the pre-2008 retirees versus the post-2008 retirees.
Pre-2008 is in subsection B.
On page 88.
Page 88. Post-2008 are in subsection C.
And C.
C, right below that. Subsection F on page 89, lines 5 and 6, basically say of that $26 million corpus, those funds cannot be used for any other purpose. So they can't be used for personnel salary increases or supplies and equipment or anything. It's solely for retiree health insurance. And then subsection G provides for flex payments. I think we discussed that the Legislative Service Office computes these payments based upon the proportionate value of 100 series by unit. We're going to be off every so often. This allows them to move money to resolve our errors. Section 305 appears on page 89 and 90. This is carryover from the mid-90s. The legislature historically has changed these percentages, but hasn't in the last 25 years. It's flex authority for the governor, 10% between programs, 5% between agencies. Section 306 provides a similar flex authority within the judiciary branch. This is standard language. The only addition we made in the judiciary was we specified that the Supreme Court is the one doing the reporting.
When you've got judiciary flex, is that something the entire Supreme Court decides on, or just the Chief Justice?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it is the judicial policy. Yes, it's the chief. So Section 101 or Agency 101 is the Supreme Court, which includes the law library and those types of activities. The Chief Justice makes those decisions.
Okay.
In the district courts, they have a collection or a board that oversees the funding among all of the district courts, and they make those flex decisions.
All right. Thank you. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, real quickly going back to this, just for my knowledge, University of Wyoming position are excluded under this paragraph on lines 5 through 8 on page 90. I'm just curious about the Community College Commission. Is that considered an executive branch agency, and how do we handle that particular unit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, currently the community college's state aid are included in the B-11 flex authority. So hypothetically, if there is a natural disaster that washes out a bridge in your county, the governor has the ability to go find extra funds across agencies except for the University of Wyoming, which has been excluded for a number of years. Included in that is unspent state aid to community colleges or any of the programs, right? So the veterans tuition program or the administration, the Community College Commission, he could go grab $50,000 to help in a emergency circumstance. He cannot do that under the current law with the University of Wyoming.
Okay. Thank you.
Please continue.
Section 307 is a limitation on the movement of funds in the 100 series. This is to limit agencies' ability to use vacancy savings or transfer leftover 100 series for other purposes. There are three important exclusions. The first is the Agency 167, University of Wyoming Medical Education, for family practice residencies, and the WAMI, which appears on page 92, lines 6 and 7. The second exclusion is the Wyoming Department of Health, and one of the policy reasons for doing that is the Title 25. Historically, that has not been fully funded, and the legislature has saw fit to provide the director additional flexibility with his budget. And then the third exclusion is the Department of Corrections, which I believe was added for the first time last year. Two biennia ago. The reporting requirements on a quarterly basis for all three entities, UW, the community UW, the Department of Corrections, and the Department of Health, are included in subsections B and C. Section 308 is major maintenance. The appropriation occurs on line 16 for $110 million, and I'll round it to $500,000. And it shall be distributed based upon the percentages submitted to you in the governor's recommendation and budget requests, 42% and change for state facilities, 37.5% for the university, and 20.5% for community colleges. Subsections B, C, and D require reporting and a submission for the 21-22 standard budget, exception budget. Section 309 includes two subsections, both related to program borrowing. The first is in reference to a governor's letter requesting $20 million for fire borrowing in the event of catastrophic fires within the state.
Fire borrowing?
Borrowing for fires, fire response.
Okay. I just liked your turn of phrase.
Subsection B provides for borrowing in the employee group health insurance program. This was also subject to pursuant to a governor's letter in the amount of $26.2 million. You'll recall that balance has been reduced significantly. As I indicated, it's probably in the mid-20s right now. And in the event that any time during the biennium there's insufficient cash flow, this provides a borrowing from the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account at an interest rate earned in the prior year. Section 310 on the bottom.
Don, I'm just curious. Was that used this year?
Mr. Chairman, it has never been used.
Never been used.
Mr. Chairman, Section 310 has been in the budget. This will be the third biennium. It provides for a limitation on salary increases that the 21-22 standard budget be equal to or less than the 19-20 standard budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Back on the borrowing, how is that profiled in the – yeah, you didn't understand.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is not profiled. I think comment here on the limitation on salary increases. I believe some legal staff flagged this as well.
Is it a red light?
I don't think it's red, but it's a it is a concern because it conflicts with statute in some cases, meaning that the statute defines what a standard budget is, and then there is budget language that is modifying that statutory definition. Subsection B of this section exempts any position identified by the Judicial Policy and Administration and reported to your committee. So it gives the judiciary branch some additional flexibility. Section 311, and this one's a little bit challenging to read because it is amending 2016 laws, Section 322 and 300. So you'll see Section 311 begins on page 97, line 10. That section actually carries through to page 98, line 28. However, in the text of this, you can see there are two other sections, Section 332 and 300, from a bill adopted 2 years ago, which is now being amended. The purpose of this section is to modify what had been a loan from the OPSTA account or the 1% severance tax account and make that a transfer. So it's a move from a loan to a transfer. And then the modification to Section 300 on page 98, the first line on page 9 and 10 is merely conforming language because Section 322 was amended and Section 300 referenced Section 322. There needs to be a conforming amendment. And then on line 16 and 17, you have not voted on this. We will bring it to your attention for a potential vote. You may elect not to. We just raise it to your attention. This, again, is highly unlikely ever to occur, but in the event that we have a dramatic drop in investment earnings, sales taxes, coal, and it would have to be roughly twice the magnitude of the 2016 fall. This provides for some conforming language in that only $144.55 million minus any amounts used for Title 25 and emergency state penitentiary funding can be transferred from the LSRA to the general fund. Section 312, beginning on page 99 and concluding on the bottom of page 101, is the 50 full-time employee work statewide employee reduction. 25 of those employees are required to be reduced in the by the end of the first fiscal year, and 25 at the end of the second fiscal year. The governor, current governor or future governor, has flexibility to swap out reductions to programs in the amount of $75,023 per FTE not cut, and take program reductions instead.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Never mind. I was reading in the wrong place.
Mr. Co-Chair, and there's an amendment to this. Is that correct?
Or was we do not have an amendment. I know there was some discussion about making this every 6 months, but we have not received a formal request to have an amendment.
Mr. Co-Chair, so if we make it every 6 months, what does that do for the projected savings?
So you'll increase that by about 50%. Right now the projection is $1.875 million, and if you did it every 6 months, say 12 or 13 employees every 6 months, I think we could generate an additional $900,000 in savings.
And then, for that amendment, and for you are getting it put in, is that better to do? I mean, how difficult would that do to do if we did it today or if we did it?
At your pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Beg your pardon?
At your pleasure.
But it's always easier to deal with the floor amendments.
Mr. Chairman, our general position at this hour is that floor amendments are easier. We recognize that. That doesn't take into account your preferences.
So we should ask you again in an hour?
Mr. Chairman, I did want to raise at least an observation on page 101 at the conclusion of this section. The direction was to staff to include all of the quote-unquote superflex that the legislature offered the governor in last biennium Section 320 budget reductions. Subsection J on lines 19 through 22 are really the master trump card. They say that this provision prevails over all other provisions in this bill. And it gives the governor transfer authority up to $1.875 million for anything else that you have done. So I just want you to be aware of that. For example, when you previously specified $200,000 shall only be used for ag education, this trumps that. When you specify that
Mr. Co-Chair, when you say trumps that, what does that mean? I mean, he can grab the $200,000
He can grab the $200,000
and use it as his cost cutter?
Yes. Not only use it for his cost cut, but transfer it to any other division within any other agency for whatever purpose he desires. This is the ultimate trump card.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would that also apply to funds that you have deposited for projects?
Mr. Chairman, only in this act. So he could not go into capital construction, for example.
But anything in the budget bill?
Yes, yes. And that's what this committee gave, although the circumstances when you made, you know, up to $250 million cuts directed the governor, you know, in a time of a shortfall, the conditions are a little bit different. This is, all I'm pointing out is this is extraordinary flexibility, which may be exactly what you intended to do. I'm pointing it out for the committee's knowledge.
And so you're talking about Section
J.
J?
Subsection J. Chairman. Senator Landon.
Don, given the stance that we took with school capital construction, for example, and pulled provisions of that bill underneath the budget bill, does that then bring those projects and that funding under this jurisdiction?
Mr. Chairman, it would.
So, Mr. Co-Chair.
But wait a minute, only to the extent of the $1.875 million?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair.
If we take this out, I mean, the governor still has flex, but it doesn't have the trump card. Is that? I mean, how would you characterize that?
Exactly. You could provide flex, but not for areas where you have appropriated only for a specific purpose. So basically what it's saying is this section is not subject to any other provision. So when you set aside something that you felt was important, you know, group health insurance for 4-H employees, this trumps.
I'm curious, because you're restricting it to the budget bill, but it says here not subject to any provision of this act or any other legislation that has an appropriation.
That's probably why it's a red flag.
Yeah. No. Good point. And to Representative Larson's point, I would stand corrected. Capital construction of the general fund variety would be included.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for those appropriations this year, but not of previous years or any unused funds.
Mr. Chairman, and I would defer if Tamara disagrees with me, I think it would be any funds in any year.
Boy, just give him a cape and a red S on his chest. I have a feeling we might visit that paragraph this afternoon or this evening. Any other questions on this issue?
So remind us of that, will you? Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, the next several pages, beginning on the bottom of page 101 and concluding on line 11 of page 110, is the entire school facilities bill, which has been incorporated now into the budget bill. I'll walk through this in general terms. You've had it presented to you several times by Ted Hewitt and Matt Wilmarth. Sections or subsections A, B, C, D, E, and F are all boilerplate language for school facilities appropriations. They don't actually do anything. They set the definitions for those subsequent appropriations. Subsection G, beginning on page 103, line 17, begins the meat of this substance of this provision. Specifically, paragraph I provides for $1 million for charter school leases, and those two schools are identified on the top of page 104. Paragraph 2 provides for $4,600 for land leases in this school district, Laramie No. 1. Paragraph 3 provides for modular leases of modular facilities. And those school districts are listed on the bottom of page 104, top of page 105. Paragraph 4 provides $4 million of emergency funding, and it has a carve-out of $90,000 for a fire sprinkler installation at Sheridan County 3. Paragraph 5 provides design funds in the amount of $1.289 million for a Sheridan Alternative School. Paragraph 6 provides a list of $19.3 million of component projects in a range of individual school districts. Those projects and districts are listed on page 106. Bottom of page 106, paragraph 7 provides for the component projects of leftover funds for Laramie School District Number 1 to be used as directed by the School Facilities Commission in working with that district. Paragraph 8 on the top of page 107 provides $300,000 for professional consulting expertise.
Don, let me back you up here. Paragraph 6 has this whole list of all these things, and paragraph 7 is only Laramie School District 1. Why? Why isn't Laramie 1 on this list of paragraph 6?
Mr. Chairman, when the Joint Appropriations Committee pulled out funding in order to fully fund Cary.
That's Cary Junior High.
This is part of the one of the components toward Cary Junior High. Okay.
Which your president has so kindly endorsed.
Paragraph 9.
And that's on the condition to name it after.
Yeah. We can do that.
Paragraph 9, Mr. Chairman, provides $3.1 million rounded for demolition projects in 10 different districts, and those districts are listed at the bottom of page 107. Paragraph 10 provides $194,000 for athletic track and fields. Paragraph 11 provides $750,000 for land acquisitions. Paragraph 12 provides $2.5 million for unanticipated costs. And here's the big one. Subsection H provides the $35 million for Cary Junior High. Subsections J, K, and M on page 109 are carryovers for Sublette County and Crook County school districts and a reversion of previously unexpended funds from prior appropriations.
And Don, going back to subsection H, could you just give us what the breakdown of where that 35 comes from?
Mr. Wilmarth?
Teach you to come in here.
Mr. Chairman, the $35 million is the $20.9 million that was reverted in subsection M.
And that came from last year's, correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that came from last year's appropriations bill for school facilities.
Right.
Then it's $4.2 million that this committee is anticipating from the fiscal year 18 SIPA. And then the $10 million remaining comes from component-level projects that were reappropriated in this legislation.
What's the final amount?
Mr. Chairman, it's $35.9 million.
No, the last...
$10 million, Mr. Chairman.
$10
million? $10 million in... commission-directed component projects that was redirected by this committee.
For Laramie County projects.
So this is redirected from the work that was going to be done on the elementary schools? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, subsection N at the bottom of page 109, top of page 110, provides for a review of school land sales, and this committee added on line 6 the words as a location in their review by the Board of Land Commissioners, finds that the lands are not suitable as a location for construction of an elementary, middle, or high school. And then
should we harmonize?
Is that the revenue committee?
Oh, I'll bet you it's the folks are practicing for the afternoon entertainment.
Okay.
Dooba, dooba, dooba. They sound like Natrona Mustangs, yes.
Okay. All right, you're on N, rather. N as in Nancy. Repeat that, please. I got distracted.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, subsection N provides for Board of Land Commissioner, that's the statewide five electeds, to review prior to disposition of any school lands, to review them as a potential suitable location for the construction of an elementary, middle, or high school.
Okay.
So before they sell off a school section, make a determination whether that school section might be on the outskirts of a growing community and viable for a future school.
So that's a criteria before they sell it.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. Finally, finishing up this section, subsection O identifies which projects, all of those identified with an asterisk, are effective immediately. All of them that are not, the appropriation would be effective July 1, 2018. Section 314, Mr. Chairman, provides for the diversion of the 1% severance tax for fiscal years 19 and fiscal year 20. So we go in and amend statute for a time period limited to the budget. There is a competing Senate file, 48, sponsored by the Revenue Committee that does essentially the same thing. So if that file, Senate file, were to be enacted into law, that Senate file would prevail over the budget bill.
Chairman? Representative Larson.
Thank you. Don, is there Senate file just for the biennium, or does it take it out longer?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's time limited. I think it may go another 2 years.
Four.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Landon. Senator Landon.
Don, real quickly, do all bills take precedent over this budget bill? You just made that reference.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, on page 111, lines 11 and 12, make Senate File 48 take precedent. So we usually say which one does. Not always. Sometimes the budget bill takes precedence. Sometimes it's the other bill. If there's no further questions, Section 315 provides for the change of the distribution of state royalties up to 33 1/3%. Currently, statute limits that at $8 million per year. 33 1/3% of the state royalty revenue stream is approximately $50 million per year. So this would provide for an additional $42 million per year, $84 million per biennium to be deposited in the school capital construction account. Again, there is a competing Senate file, 49, as noted on page 113, line 4. If Senate file 49 is enacted by this legislature, signed by the governor, this section would be repealed.
And what does 49 do?
49 does same action as this subsection.
Okay. I was just waiting for the nod.
Mr. Chairman, that one...
It's the difference between going into statute versus to you just the length of this budget. Okay, got you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 316, this is the over the $500 million federal mineral royalty distribution. This applies to fiscal year 18, fiscal year 19, and fiscal year 20. Any amounts in excess of $500,000 of federal mineral royalties received by the state.
$500 million,
correct. Received by the state in any of those three fiscal years shall be distributed 2/3 to the school foundation program, line 15, page 114, and 1/3 to the budget reserve account on line 18. So under current law, it is 2/3 to the budget reserve account, 1/3 to the school foundation program. This language would provide a switch of that revenue distribution for three fiscal years. The total impact of this is approximately $26 million more will be deposited into the school foundation program. $26 million less would be deposited in the budget reserve account. Mr. Chairman, Section 317 on the bottom of page 114, all of page 115, and to line 14 on page 116 provides for a redistribution for the period of the budget, just two fiscal years, fiscal year 2019, fiscal year 2020, for any COLE's bonus revenues received. Any excess revenues that would have normally gone to the school capital construction account under this provision would be deposited in the school foundation program reserve account. Currently, there, Craig projects no deposits of COLE's bonuses in these two fiscal years, so there is no profiled fiscal impact. It would be a future COLE sale. Mr. Chairman, Section 318 begins on page 116, line 17, and concludes at the top of page 117. This provides very similar language in Section 303, a carryover of a prior appropriation. In this case, it was a carryover of $2 million of AML funds originally provided to the Pipeline Authority, revised and directed to the Governor's Office for purposes of pipeline GIS mapping work and other provisions related to the implementation of pipelines. The Governor requested that these funds carry over. We can't carry it over as easily because this initial appropriation was not made in the budget bill. It was made in AML bills, so we have to go in, as noted, and amend laws, including 2012 session law and 2016 session law.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. How much is left there?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's 1.7. Mr. Chairman, that might be a little high. I thought it was 1.7. I'm advised that might be a little more than what's in there now. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I do have the exact number. It's $948,000.
Oh, yeah, that was high.
There was $2 million originally appropriated in 2012. 6 years later, there's $948,000.
All right, Section 319.
Section 319. This we took some staff privilege in crafting it. We provide $1.1 million and four full-time employees and provide those to the Supreme Court and allow them to be distributed to the three judicial district courts in this Laramie County Judicial District. The reason why it's written a little bit oddly is we can't authorize the creation of a new judge in a budget bill, but we can provide the appropriation and we can provide all the FTEs. This is in case 2018 House bill, and we don't have a number for that, is enacted into law, then this section would be repealed. So this committee has approved a bill to fund this permanently and authorize a new judge in Judicial District Number 1.
And the bill that authorizes the new judge, does that have this matching appropriation in here?
Mr. Chairman, it does. So right okay. Now it's in both places.
Okay. So the money will be profiled either way?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. What happens if that bill fails?
Mr. Chairman, then Section 319 would go into effect. It wouldn't provide a new judge, but it would give that district court four new employees and $1 million to help with their workload.
Which means a new judge. Temporary judge.
Temporary judge.
Section 320, probably the most difficult of all of the sections in the budget bill. This is the SIPA 19 guarantee. So we go into the SIPA provisions in statute, Wyoming Statute 941719, beginning on line 4, page 119, and guarantee those funds. The first $14.2 million at the top of page 119, that's the guarantee that needs to be set aside for the general fund under the current January 2008 Craig estimate. Then there is a additional set aside for as soon as practicable after the beginning of the fiscal year, the 2.5% that is guaranteeing the general fund currently is made available from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund reserve account. To the extent funds are available after that 2.5%, and they are, we've already calculated that, paragraph T, beginning on line 17, page 119, provides for the insurance of 1.25% to the SIPA account, only for fiscal year 2019. Paragraph or subsection U, beginning on page 120, line 9, provides for a payback in the case that 1.25% investment earnings was earned. It would not reside in the SIPA account. It would go pay back the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund reserve account. So at the end of the fiscal year, everyone ends up with the money they should have. But getting there is a little bit complicated.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, if we could go back to the top of 119, I was writing and I'm not reading at the same time. I didn't quite understand Romanet 1 and then Romanet 2. I wrote that one guaranteed it and then the other made it available, but I'm not sure if I have that. Could you just go over that again?
Sure. So under Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think the goal was to hold in no case should the general fund bear the burden of guaranteeing the SIPA. So paragraphs 1 and 2 put the general fund first in line for the receipt of any funds from the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund reserve account.
So, Mr. Chairman, so paragraph 1 sets it aside and 2 is the transfer, or why are there two paragraphs? What's the two paragraphs?
Okay, so paragraph 1, in your household example, is you putting the $2,000 in the CD. And paragraph 2 is if you didn't need the $2,000 and you close the account, you get it back.
Okay, thank you.
That's so, just a
Mr. Kutcher, I'm just curious. We've guaranteed the SIPA before, but I don't remember this type of language in the last one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you've never guaranteed the SIPA before.
I haven't. Okay. So we had the tranches, but they were
not guaranteed.
They were just
they were not guaranteed.
Yeah.
So all of that language, nothing gets appropriated. This is all just the investment guarantee. The next section, section 321, if folks are ready to move on, are how those funds are spent. Paragraph AI on line 6 through 8, page 121, provides the first appropriation of $40,833,000.
I'm sorry. I want to go back to on page 120. Line 21B, if 2018 House Bill XX is enacted into law, this section is repealed. What bill is that?
Mr. Chairman, we had to leave a placeholder in there. I will there's legislation. In the event a legislator were to request a bill, we needed to provide a placeholder. That is the placeholder. We can't obviously discuss what may or may not have been requested by other legislators until they reveal the bill.
So there could be a bill coming dealing with the 2019 SIPA guarantees?
There could.
Anything's possible.
Okay.
Moving on. Mr. Chairman, section 321, paragraph AI, starts the expenditure of SIPA 19 funds. First $40.8 million is a direct deposit to the school capital construction account. The second paragraph, paragraph 2, beginning on line 10, provides for $39.5 million to the economic diversification account created under current statute, Wyoming Statute 912-1404. That is in Dow. Then as a result of, I believe it was a Summers Amendment, added $2 million to the $37.5 million requested by the governor and set that aside only for purposes of expenditure related to agriculture in Wyoming. And subparagraphs 1 through 3 specify how those funds can be used. It's an appropriation to the business council under those restrictions. I would encourage the sponsor or any interested member to carefully look over those and ensure that we captured the intent of your motion correctly.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, I don't know if you're listening to the governor's speech this morning, but he made reference to a trade representative in Taiwan. Is that in here? Is there a bill showing up? Was that? Does that? What?
Is there going to be a new governor's letter?
Session would be much easier to manage if it weren't for the legislators.
Yeah. Can I resign and take that job?
Mr. Chairman, the top of page 122 dovetails into the conversation. To answer your question, I am not aware of that. But I do know that there are a number of bills, four endowed bills, two of which were heard by Management Council on Saturday, two more of which will be heard. And that's not all of them. There are others that may or may not be introduced. And the language on lines 5 through 11 of page 122 is our best attempt to earmark these funds for endow purposes and then defer to the manner in which those funds, those bills, spend the money. So we don't know which of those bills are going to pass, the broadband bill, air services bill, workforce services bill, trade bills, and this language allows us to earmark the funds and then spend it through those other pieces of legislation. Mr. Chairman, Section 322, because the state penitentiary savings account is already provided for in statute, and it provides actually for a higher level of deposit, potentially, than what the JAC ended on, Section 322 provides $10 million per year to be deposited from SIPA 19 guaranteed and SIPA 20 unguaranteed to a reserve account for a future construction of a state penitentiary.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hess.
Mr. Chairman, just real quick back on page 122, 5 through 11 on that endow. There's not actually a air service bill out there, and the bills that are coming through Management Council overextend this $37 million. Right now we need to, and I'm not sure if it's going to be Management Council working with one of the other bills, needs to find a spot for, if we're going to do air enhancement.
Well, there is an air service bill.
There's an air service bill, but without an appropriation. Without the $15 million. There's not $15 million in any of the bills.
The question I have, I'm confused by this down on line 23. I thought we weren't touching SIPA 20, SIPA 2020. When all of a sudden I see $10 million coming out of it. It's not guaranteed, but it's
not guaranteed. No, we stuck $10 million in it for the funding for that. SIPA 20. It's not guaranteed 10 million a year.
See, they're so mad they're walking out. All right, and then on page 123, line 9, is that another placeholder?
Mr. Chairman, it is.
That you cannot speak
I cannot of? Discuss.
Okay.
So we'll take it out then.
And then see who screams the loudest. All right, anything more on 322? 323?
Mr. Chairman, 323 is a total of $11 million appropriation from the landfill remediation account, $2 million of which is to be used for cease and transfer grants, and $9 million of which is to be used for solid waste landfill remediation. That was a request, I believe, late in the process from the Department of Environmental Quality.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Don. So it sounds, if memory has that correct, we had $11 million in there that had been previously appropriated. We shifted two to cease and transfer and given the authority to use it there, and then we're giving them the authority to spend the nine. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Section 324 begins on the top of page 124. This is direction to ETS, Department of Enterprise Technology Services. Paragraph or subsection A provides for strategic purchasing or bulk purchasing. And subsection B provides for reports back to this committee on identifiable savings from these bulk purchasing programs and any waivers that the agency provides, the reasons for such waivers, and the description of the implemented program. Subsection C complies with this committee's motion, but I do have to flag this one as the motion includes the Community College Commission and the University of Wyoming. All computer hardware and operating software shall be purchased by the Department of Enterprise Technology Services. That is in conflict with statute, which does not give the CIO authority over those higher education institutions. It does not apply, as specified in line 21 and 22, to the judicial branch, and at this time for school districts. But you recall there is a review ongoing relative to K-12.
So we're going to have to get rid of C, basically.
We would offer that as a strong caution.
All right. 325.
325 provides for $400,000 from the general fund for court security activities, and allows for direct purchases by the state or grants to counties. Something similar to this has been done in prior biennia, and we've adopted much of that prior language. Or incorporated, excuse me, much of that prior language.
326.
326 provides for $21.37 million to the Department of Health to address their FY18 shortfall. These funds are effective immediate, to be used for Medicare payments, optional Medicaid services, SSI payments, and Medicaid services provided by FQHCs or federally qualified healthcare centers. It also allows funding to be used for the eligibility system and state matches for the enhancement of certified automated Medicaid claims processing. There is appropriated a sufficient amount of federal funds as necessary to provide the maximum leverage allowable. Subsection C is the manner in which staff interpreted your motion, that this was only for fiscal year 18 and that any unspent, unexpended, unobligated funds shall revert on June 30, 2018. Section 327 is new. We take this under the, you gave staff direction to provide for technical issues, this is the technical issue. In five different provisions within the Section 300s, we are changing statute. Under current statute 28.8.105, the Legislative Service Office has the authority in preparing copy for printing of the statute to make revisions. All of these changes need to come out of the green books in 2020. This gives LSO the ability to work with LexisNexis and make all of these one-time changes to the severance taxes, federal mineral royalties, coal lease bonuses, SIPA policy, and get those out of the statute on July 1, 2020.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, the next bill is the state-funded capital construction bill, if you wish to discuss that.
Any more questions on the budget bill? Okay, let's take a quick short break. All right, we'll call the meeting back to order. Before we go on to the CapCon bill, one of the items that we did not appropriate money for was cybersecurity to ETS. And the governor specifically mentioned it in his State of the State. So at the request of one of the members of the committee, we've got the head of ETS here, Tony Young, and to ask him to give us kind of a further explanation to see if this is something we may want to add in the round robin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tony Young, director of ETS, and also the state information chief information officer. With respect to Governor's Letter Number 8, I'm afraid that, and I want to apologize to the committee, I get in a habit that when we're explaining what goes on, if you may recall back on either the 15th or the 17th of January when we were talking about this, I briefly mentioned that, you know, we have several hundred thousand attacks on our network in that a day. I don't know that I stress the importance of what I see as a very important issue with cybersecurity. I didn't do a good enough job to explain it. The last cybersecurity request that we had put in was to establish a cybersecurity center of excellence at UW to educate students and to have them come into the workforce and work on cybersecurity. This ask, while still titled cybersecurity, is actually different. This is for tools and products and services that we need to protect our network. Since the time that you have seen this and it was denied, I wanted to bring that back up and to stress to you the importance of cybersecurity on all of the state's networks. I will tell you that I truly believe that we are in a situation now where we will not be discussing if we are going to get attacked or if there's going to be a breach. I believe it's just a matter of when. Sitting to my left and is Arlen Fletcher, the Chief Information Security Officer with the Department of Enterprise Technology Services, who has extensive background in this. I asked him to research some of these topics, and so we went to the National Conference for State Legislatures, and we have a budgeting guidance that is issued on behalf of the NCSL for you to review. I realize this is a lot of documentation. We also partner with a group called MSISAC. That's a multi-state analysis, identification and analysis center that's operated at the federal government that discusses all of the topics that occur with cyber breaches around the country. We share information with them and they share information with us. They have issued a document called their government outlook for what they foresee is going to happen in the coming future in 2018 with cyber attacks that are going to continue on state government and local systems and government networks. In fact, they expect that to grow significantly. We are not in a position right now to defend our network as we're doing the best that we can with what we have. I had initially put this request for my request is a bit higher than what the governor's letter was to see if we could get that into our budget. The governor stressed that he thought it might be more appropriate to put it in a governor's letter. At the time that we did the governor's letter, again, I don't believe I I answered or gave you all the data that you need, and so now I'm playing catch-up because, frankly, I'm very worried that we are in a very tenable position, that we are vulnerable on our network without some investment from the state of Wyoming to protect our data, the data that's on these systems, health data, family data, payroll records, all of that stuff that's on the network. So the attackers are getting much more sophisticated. I went through the comments in your briefing with regards to the denial of the request. I understood each and every one of them. I respect those, but I think it was based on information that was not available to you at the time. So my effort today is to express to you a strong sense of urgency that there be a significant investment as you partner with the state and with ETS, a significant approach to helping us protect the state's network. I think we're quite vulnerable at this point. I will note that Saturday, returned from a round table where CIOs are discussing. We meet several times a year. This is the single biggest topic on everybody's plate is cybersecurity. Our state to the west of us, Utah, their current request is for $19 million on their budget to enhance their services. Other states are all in the area of 10 or more million dollars. Ours, I think, is a modest request at 2.3 or 2.291. And I would certainly very much appreciate a second review and an attempt to answer any of your questions and explain what we're doing with cybersecurity in the time that you have allotted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Director, looking at the governor's letter, and I actually did vote not to deny the governor's letter. I'll just say unsuccessfully at the time. But so in the letter, it says the money will be allocated for dues, licenses, registrations, subscriptions, training, software licenses, and so on. It does say at the end, analysis of complex risk scenarios. But could you help me to understand a little bit I know, like, you know, at home you have various patches, or I've got AVG or whatever it is. Or you're not looking for sort of cyber warriors to sit there and monitor the computers as personnel, or maybe help us understand a little bit better how the licenses and subscriptions and things impact the cybersecurity.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, if I could defer to Arlen, who is the expert in this arena. This is not an ask for any FTEs or bodies, so to speak, but he can far better explain what the intricacies are of that. So thank you, Arlen.
Mr. Chairman, Arlen Fletcher, Chief Information Security Officer for ETS, and Representative Wilson. I have to take some of the blame for this as well. I should have provided more detail, and our follow-up letter did provide a considerable amount of detail on what exactly those items are. In no case are we asking for an additional headcount. These are subscriptions for tools, in many cases, that we already have that are required to be renewed annually. And these are for tools that help us monitor the network and monitor our systems for signs of breach and also enable us to deal with those breaches as we're able.
Representative Summers.
So, Mr. Chairman, I did go to the broadband conference and listen to – it was kind of scary, you know, about – though it was put on by those that sell the products. So, you know, that I'm sure it's designed to be a bit scary, but Is most of this services like you're going to buy a program, a service from a vendor, or overlay several services? How does this work? And I know maybe you did a follow-up, but it really, when this letter came out, it looked like a really big wag.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I understand, and again, I'll take responsibility for that, not providing you enough information to make an informed decision. So I regret that and apologize for that. Yes, we lumped a lot of things into one paragraph there. There is the concept within cybersecurity and within the military world in general that a layered defense is a reasonable approach. And in our case, we do overlay various components, various solutions, hardware, software, in order to provide that layered defense. The concept being that a breach of a single defensive layer will not allow a attacker to gain full access to their target. So they have to peel the onion one layer at a time in order to try to get in. And the more layers we have, obviously, the more difficult it is for them. And in many cases, the more difficult it is, the more incentive they have to go someplace else and look for a target. So a layered defense is very much an intentional thing. And so in answer to your question, yes, we did overlay things.
Just follow up on that. So Mr. Chairman, I guess my question was, are you going to hire do you do that internally, or are you hiring a service or multiple services to provide this layered approach?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, it's both. We will use the existing personnel that we have, and we also hire services to do things like penetration tests that are third parties that are experts at this, that come in and try to break into our network to test our defenses, to show us where we may have shortcomings, and give us ideas on how to shore those up.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Jockstown.
Mr. Chairman, I think you've established that we have to be better prepared, we have to have better security, but how do we know along the way that it's working? Is there some method or process or program that lets us know that we are being taken care of?
Well, you can speak to your plan, your loft.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and Senator Dockstetter, there is a method for measuring progress, and it's security metrics. And there are a set of metrics that we would use, measures that would indicate that we're making progress or not. And we've also recently undertaken an assessment of the information security program within ITS to figure out where we want to be, where we're currently at, and address those gaps in between. And those gaps are the drivers for the requests that we made in the governor's letter. And in addition to that, there's another approach called risk-based management. And one of the things that we've asked for is a tool that will allow us to evaluate what our current risk is and be able to answer the question that you should be able to ask me at any point in time, and that is, how much risk do we have in dollars and cents? And if we ask for widget X next year and it costs, you know, Y dollars, what will that do in terms of reducing our risk in terms of dollars and cents? So that this becomes more of a science than a guessing game, and that we can give you answers to that question about how much risk do we have in dollars and cents.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Larson, is this a really important point? Because I've offered them five. They've taken 15 through our questions, not your fault. But we wanted to get to the CAPCON bill. Okay. Thank you
just
very much.
Just in closing, one quick statement I wanted to mention to answer.
Mr. Kocher, I've got quite a few questions.
Go ahead.
So first of all, I want to know how much you're spending now for security and what's out there. We never want to be at risk or vulnerable. So I find that, so either you're giving us a sell job or you're doing a poor job. So tell us what it is, because why would we ever put the state at risk?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe it was a poor job, and I'll take responsibility for that. I should have sold that differently. We have taken care of cybersecurity issues within the budget that exist that were standard expenditures like malware protection and virus and antiviral software and services like that. We have firewalls that are embedded in our hardware, and the maintenance contracts that are involved with those firewalls, with the switches and with the various devices, they protect and keep us up to date. They patch those things. The acceleration with which is going on now in the world of cybersecurity and breaches is a failure to keep up with that. We are falling behind. I think we've been very aggressive. I think we've done a good job. To answer some of your question and part of what Representative Summers said, is we're using a service known as it's called CrowdStrike. It's an overwatch protection program. It's software. Security is a service. We have a group of professionals. We pay them a fee. I think that's about, is it $300,000? Roughly $300,000 to $400,000 biennially they operate what's known as an overwatch. And if they see an attack or something on our systems with our software, they notify us immediately. One quick example was, the governor took an unexpected trip and was on a trip in China. We did not notify the overwatch people. The minute that his computer came online in China, they gave us a call in the middle of the night. One of your machines is just lit up. It's on an IP address in Shanghai or wherever it was at, and notified us, and we were able to resolve it. So that's the kind of stuff that we're doing and aggressively trying to keep up on top of that. This is an addition to and an augmentation of protecting those systems. And I apologize if it was a poor sale or a bad sale. I think we're doing the best we can with what we have right now. I anticipate it to be worse, Chairman. It's just going to get worse. And that's where my level of anxiety comes to make sure that we're all on the same page. I understand you've got a difficult job to do. I get that. I understand it's the people's money. I understand all of that. But if you make those decisions fully informed, we're with you 100%. But be fully informed.
Well, and Mr. Co-Chair, the problem is we're not fully informed. I think Mr. Fletcher just said we don't even know. You can't tell us what you currently spend. You're not telling us what our current risk is and how much it costs and what risk we're going to be eliminating, other than just telling us that you're doing it. And so, when you guys were here earlier, you just ran across about five different software programs that you wanted to buy that were composed of this $2.3 million, and we don't know how their redundancies are, why you have to have all of them, what the ongoing expenses and costs of them are. Are we being over paranoid or under paranoid? We just don't know those things. And so how do we make that determination and make an educated determination when we're not providing enough information other than saying, we're vulnerable, and so we need the money. So we need more help on making this type of decision.
Mr. Chairman, that's accurate. And we have prepared the documents that will answer the questions that you've just raised. And I have them available for you. It is some reading. There are probably 14, 15 pages, explains what we're doing, our vulnerability assessment, how we're doing our governance, our identity, our protection, our detection, and our response. We've scored those items. Under all of the national standards and the computer information security standards, we score them the same as everybody else in this business does. We currently sit at an aggregate score of 2.8 from our assessment in the five areas. A perfect score would be five, a losing score. We're about halfway there.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, of this $2.3 million, what will the annual fees, is this going to be a constant ask? That's the first question. And number two, what is it going to be? And the other component is, based upon your model, why wouldn't you just assess this to who you're providing your services to, like you do with your, all your other services to the various agencies?
I'll let you handle that one.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know about the chargeback. I'm new here, but it seems like a reasonable approach in my personal opinion, but I don't know all the ins and outs, so I'll leave that to Director Young to address. In terms of this, is this going to be a constant ask? No, I don't expect so. I have a four-year plan in place, and I have budget numbers laid out for that four-year plan. It will go down after this year, after this biennium. And most of the reason for that is that the things that we're considering purchasing to help us with the security are a single perpetual license. And so we purchase it up front, but then there's an annual maintenance fee that goes along with that that gives us access to professionals on the other end when we have technical issues, that sort of thing. It's typically 10 to 20% of the cost of the items that we're looking at.
And so then, Mr. Co-Chair, what all agencies are you providing this protection to? Is it every state agency? Does it go to the Game and Fish? Does it assist YDOT? Or, I mean, what's the focus and what are you protecting?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, this protects everybody that's on the executive branch network, all of that's on the network. That would include Game and Fish. That would include DOT. Whom it would not include is legislature or the judicial branches. To the extent that it's the unified network and the other parts of the network that reach the schools, to all of the points that we protect all of the points to the schools, and in some cases we are assisting in some of the school districts. Most of them do it, I think, on their own. They have their own IT. So I hope that gives you an idea of the totality of it.
Thank you.
Representative Larson, you had a question?
I still am going to be okay.
Okay, because at this point, we don't have time to get into the CAPCON bill. The Senate, both houses reconvene at 2, and the senators have a long walk, and we're old and crippled.
Wait a minute.
So, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And we will reconvene upon adjournment.
It's like 15 minutes after adjournment. So we have a state facilities task force meeting.
Okay. 15 minutes after adjournment. And then the plan is to go through over the CAPCON bill and then do the round robin on the appropriations bill. All right. All right. Thank you. All right.